Welcome to the Evolved Caveman Podcast. I am Dr. John, the guide for your heroic journey towards greater health, success, and most importantly, happiness. And now, on with the show.
Hi, this is Dr. John, and I am thrilled to announce that Jory and I are opening up our retreat in beautiful Costa Rica from September 28th of 2024 to October 5th. Everyone wants fulfilling relationships. The hard part is love is not enough. So many factors can get in the way, preventing ongoing connection, intimacy, and aligned growth. All healthy relationships start within. But when we have unresolved stuff, it can easily interfere with those we are seeking to be closest with. Whether you're in a long-term committed partnership or are single and are looking for love, this retreat will guide you in the heroic journey of healing yourself so that you can be open and available to cultivate the fulfilling relationships you desire and deserve. To find out more, visit jorierose.com/retreats. That's jorierose.com/retreats.
Hey, everybody. This is Dr. John back with another episode of the Evolved Caveman Podcast. And today, my esteemed guest is Don St. John. And Don's life has been nothing short of miraculous. He suffered abuse, pretty extreme abuse in childhood, violent beatings, and constant verbal abuse. In his early 20s, he was incapable of feeling human connection, had poor impulse control, drank excessively, and had poor physical health. By age 35, he had gone through 3 marriages and 3 divorces. He had very little, if any, sense of connection to his body or to his own emotions. His life trajectory looked bleak indeed. Today, the author of the award-winning book, Healing the Wounds of Childhood, A Psychologist's Journey and Discoveries from Wretched Beginnings to a Thriving Life, shares and teaches about the work he has done and how he transformed his life from the inside out. He offers ways for others to do the same, no matter what the age or what the beginnings. Don, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me, John. You summarized those early years of my life quite well. And, you know, my journey began, I was about 20 years old, and I woke up in the back seat of my car, and I was bleeding from my throat. I'd been out drinking all night and hollering and just making a racket and burst of blood vessels. Didn't know what it was until I got to the hospital. And I realized I needed help. So I looked in the Yellow Pages, found a psychiatrist that worked on Saturday. I was in the Air Force at the time, working Monday through Friday. And that was the beginning. That was the beginning of a journey that's ongoing some 60 years later.
Wow, that's amazing. And so that was your bottom. That was your low point. That was the point where you woke up.
Yes, that's the point where it began. That was the low point. Clearly I was on a trajectory that would end in early death. And almost did. Had I not altered that trajectory in my 30s, I'd have been dead now, without a doubt.
Yeah, I call that a slow suicide. I've had other clients that are alcoholics, for example, or addicts, and I kind of beseech them to stop the slow suicide because I think they don't want to live. They don't want to kill themselves either.
Exactly. There wasn't much to live for.
Yeah.
I was pretty frozen on the inside. I didn't really ever feel a human connection. Didn't even know what it was till years later, well into my 30s before I did. So yeah, there wasn't much to live for. So, smoking, drinking, not paying attention to anything health related. Yeah, I'd agree with your assessment, John.
I've had a lot of younger clients. Sorry to interrupt. I've had a lot of younger clients in late teens, early 20s that don't expect to live past fill in the number 21, 30, And so they're just kind of they have that live fast, die young mentality.
Yeah, it's a tragedy.
And along with purposeless wandering and kind of an addiction to hedonism, right? They just want sex, drugs, rock and roll.
Yeah, I think that's because they don't know an alternative. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've come a long way since my early 20s, and my perspective has changed considerably. I mean, I'll make an extreme statement. We can unpack it more if you'd like. My childhood was hideous, obviously. Even things you didn't mention, like a very, very difficult birth, like being unwanted at conception. I mean, all of that. Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's rough.
When you hear it, and yet, and this is where I ask you and our listeners to hold both of these statements. It was hideous and it was perfect, because every moment of that childhood preceded and led to this moment that you and I are having here talking about it all.
Yeah, and thank you for saying that, Don. I think it's that to me is a reflection of wisdom. That to me is a reflection of the mature ability to hold competing truths in your head at the same time, which I think is a hallmark of emotional maturity.
I completely agree. I call it AND consciousness.
Yeah, I love it.
You know, both. Well,
explain that. Explain that to me.
Well, I mean, if you look at my childhood, you could easily conclude that it's hideous. But can you also hold that there was a perfection in it, that it provided me with a path that led to my writing two books? You mentioned the first book. The second, that just came out a few months ago, is Healing the Wounds of Childhood and Culture, An Adventure of a Lifetime, which is a different perspective here, because, you know, let me stay with the AND consciousness, because that's the question you asked. When we look at our identity, for example, if we're locked in to a specific image of how we're supposed to be, for example, completely monogamous at all times in our thoughts, feelings, and actions, right? Well, then what do we do when we have feelings and thoughts that aren't aligned with that particular image? Okay, what do we do with that?
Yeah, suppress it. We feel shame. We feel guilt.
Exactly.
And we hate ourselves.
The stereotype is the preacher who rails against all forms of immorality on Sunday, and then the next Saturday night is caught in a house of ill repute. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, he can't integrate those sides. And that's what I mean by and. You know, I am monogamous. I clearly am. And there's a part of me that doesn't want to be. Mm-hmm. And it's important that I acknowledge that too. And that keeps me out of trouble.
Yeah, acknowledge it and accept it. I like to explain that the and philosophy using improv comedy. So I talk about the yes and rather than the yeah but. And explain that the philosophy comes from improv comedy, where if you're doing improv comedy on stage, you take what your fellow actor or comedian has built for you verbally, and you accept it completely, and you build upon it. And that's where the humor comes from, is it leads to such absurdities. But the idea is the same in life, that if we can use that to accept life and to build upon what's already present, whether or not, I mean, a lot of times we are resisting what is present.
I didn't hear the last. Was that the dog barking?
Sorry, I was muting it because of the dog. Okay. Yeah, just the idea that we can, that I think a lot of times we're struggling against what already exists in our present situation.
Yeah,
we just don't want to accept the present.
Yeah, for example, if I have a belief that as a male, I need to be tough all the time, then there's no room to be tender, to be receptive, to even to be adaptable.
Yeah.
Okay? I rigidify around an image.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And in that process, negate my authentic experience.
Yeah, and negate huge parts of yourself.
Exactly.
Which leads to illness, whether mental or physical.
Exactly.
Or acting out behavior. I suppose we can go a lot of ways with that.
Yep. All of the above. Right.
So let's talk a little bit about trauma, because your journey is traumatic, was traumatic, and trauma is a vague and overused word, and it's used a lot these days. So how do you define trauma?
Well, trauma, you know, originally means wound. And so in my book, I use that generic wound because trauma, first of all, it's ambiguous. People use it as, oh, I had a traumatic day at the office because the coffee machine wasn't working.
Mm-hmm.
Versus I got hit by a bus. And, you know, using the same word to describe those extremely different experiences, it can become confusing.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go in the literature, you'll come across concepts like shock trauma, big T trauma, little T trauma, developmental trauma, relational trauma, a lot of definitions. And what it basically means is we're wounded.
Mm-hmm.
We've been wounded. And the intensity, the magnitude of those wounds differ. Whoops. An Italian talks with his hands, and I knocked the mic. and I'm Italian, so I can say that. I can get away with that.
Fair enough.
So here's one of my contentions, John. It's that we've all been wounded.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And rather than use the medical model, that, you know, do you have trauma or don't you have trauma? Let's look at our wounds. We all have them. And the journey to healing, as far as I'm concerned, is the purpose of life.
Yeah.
Because
I agree. I love that. I love that idea of the purpose of life is growth, evolution, healing. I think that's really true. And I'm, in my estimation, I think that just growing up male in this man box culture is traumatic to some degree. Now, I can say the same for females, but I'm more focused on males. So females, forgive me who are listening. But I think just growing up in this culture, we're going to be bullied. We're going to be name called. We're going to be hit. We're going to be put down. We're going to be shamed for feeling human emotions.
Yeah, exactly. And more fundamentally, our deep experience, our authentic experience is not appreciated, not supported, punished, either subtly or overtly. So we learn to cut out parts of ourselves. You know, there's this tension between attachment and expression.
Yeah, can I read you a quote real quick from Soren Kierkegaard, one of the great philosophers? He said, the most common form of despair is not being who you are.
Mm.
Speaking to that authenticity, right? Or lack of authenticity.
Exactly.
So when we get cut off from ourselves, it leads to despair.
Most of us do to, if not all of us, John, if not mm-hmm. all of us,
it's hard not to
some extent or other. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm sorry, I interrupted.
No, go ahead.
Okay. Well, so how does trauma affect us? How does it impact us? What are the various systems in the body that it speaks to?
Might be easier to answer what doesn't it. But let me talk about the ways that are not yet well understood, because, you know, obviously it affects our emotions. It affects our capacity to be intimate, to be close, mm-hmm. to reveal ourselves deeply to one another, to open our hearts and love.
Yeah. And be loved.
And be loved, absolutely. And it affects our brain. It affects our nervous system. What's not understood is that it also affects the very tissues of our body. A metaphor that I've used to convey that idea, John, is if you compare a sponge that's wet, moist, versus a sponge that's completely dried out. Okay? That's mm-hmm. that's what trauma does. It kind of dries out. It renders the tissues more dense. And to the degree that it interferes with our connection, our conscious connection to those tissues, it affects our sense of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, when we look at, take a male body. Hey, you were talking about the wounds to maleness. Well, if you're in touch with those back muscles and shoulder muscles and pelvic muscles, they're strong. Even on a, I'm a kind of thin guy here, but when I'm in touch with those muscles, I feel that. I mm-hmm. feel my capacity to fight, for example. Okay? But in front here, in the belly and in the heart, although the heart is protected by a rib basket, but those tissues are tender. They're mm-hmm. really soft and tender and receptive. So if we can be in touch with both sides, for example, it's more mm-hmm. complex, but
yeah,
just to illustrate, we can be in touch with both our strength and our force and our tenderness, our yeah. vulnerability.
I think that's the goal, right? Is to have access to all sides of yourself, all aspects exactly. of your psyche.
I agree. And it correlates highly with our connection to our own tissues.
Yeah. And I, in my mind, I'm kind of right now, I'm equating stress and trauma, which aren't they're not quite the same thing. But when you were talking about trauma affecting the physical body, like I know a man in his 50s who is kind of rebelling against his life and has turned to sex, drugs, and rock and roll as a distraction. And someone who knows him quite well was saying he's aged. In 2 years, he's aged noticeably. And yeah. I feel like there's a disconnection from meaning and purpose. And there's more of this wanderlust or shrugging off of rules and constrictions and control in an attempt to, I don't know, live life to the fullest or live a life of pleasure. And I just think while that's tempting, I don't think it serves us in many ways.
I think it misses the mark.
How so?
Which, by the way, is one definition of sin.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember what language or culture that came from, but it misses the mark in the sense that, yeah, one is attempting, this gentleman may be attempting to free himself from the constraints and restrictions and limitations, the wounds of mm-hmm. his childhood and early life. He may be seeking to be free, but turning to sex, drugs, and rock and roll isn't going to get him what he wants. Mm-hmm. My guess is that what he wants is genuine connection. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the ability to, on one hand, to just love in your interactions with people.
To love, I would add love and be loved, because I think we can struggle with both or either of those.
Oh, I think you're absolutely right. I think one of the most difficult things for human beings is to really receive love.
Absolutely.
Someone asked
me, I think we don't feel worthy of it.
That's probably the single biggest issue, the single common denominator issue running underneath all the diagnoses and many of the chronic physical health issues as well.
Can I interject something there? So, sorry, I was in the shower this morning, because this all revolves around inner child work to me. Like, there's so much inner child work here that needs to be done. And so I've been working on it myself and was doing a little IFS work, internal family systems, you know. And so I was meditating in the shower, talking to my 4-year-old who, you know, didn't feel worthy because he got yelled at by a mom. And so I was having a conversation with my 4-year-old self, just saying, hey, look, I understand you were hurt. You're safe now. You're with me. I'll take care of you. I love you. You are worthy. You're worthy of love. You're worthy of giving love. You're worthy of receiving love. You're worthy of success. You're worthy of happiness. You are fucking worthy.
Mm.
And just trying to have these ongoing conversations to get him to let go and relax and understand that he is, in fact, worthy of many things, love being one of them.
Yeah, that's beautiful. He's a very fortunate 4-year-old. Because, as I said, I think every other issue is built on that profound feeling of not being worthy.
Yeah.
You know, and that comes from parts of self being rejected.
Yeah.
Or not being met. I think one of the things.
Let me pause you there for a second, because one of the things I wanted to get to, because I think obviously this is not an issue with us, but I think it's an issue with 85% of the population at least. So my experience has been that trauma largely operates outside of our conscious awareness. So how do we begin to become aware of the trauma in ourselves? How do we make that conscious?
Well, I think the way it usually happens is some suffering, whether it's an illness, a divorce, distress in a relationship. You know, in my case, waking up in the back seat of my car. I was in the back seat because I let somebody else drive one of the few times that I did that. And, you know, that was enough to say, wake up.
Mm-hmm. And let me ask you this. So I agree that I think life does this to us all, you know, cuts us off at the knees and forces us to experience some really tremendous pain and suffering. And I think those are great wake-up opportunities, because mm-hmm. we get humbled and because it puts us in a position where we are willing or forced to ask for help and forced to introspect. So how do we begin to heal from these traumas?
Let me count the ways.
What are some of your favorites? Put it that way. Because there are a number of ways.
Yeah, there are. You know, beginning with simple self-reflection and an attempt to understand what the beliefs are that I formulated out of those traumatic experiences. For example, the belief that I really don't deserve to be loved.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, I boiled it down to 4 areas in my second book. We have to look at the body, or more specifically, our connection to our body. There was a philosopher turned somatic practitioner by the name of Thomas Hanna. Don't know if you've heard of him.
No.
Have you heard of the Feldenkrais method?
Yes.
Okay. Hanna brought Moshe Feldenkrais to this country.
Gotcha.
Took his first training and went on to develop his own somatic work. Now, Hanna was a philosopher by trade. He was chairman of the Department of Philosophy at the University of Florida, Gainesville. Wow. And his philosophy led him to an understanding of the body that's still pretty not discovered yet. And that is, the body has two sides. See, I look into this monitor, John. I see your body. I see your shining skull and majestic quality. I see your shoulders. But from the inside, you're not experiencing your shoulder. Okay? We can all see your shoulder. What we can't see, and only you can know, is that sense of connection that you have to those shoulders. How do they feel to you? What information do you receive from those shoulders? You know, and that was Tom's insight. He coined the word somatic. The body is what everybody sees, and we have libraries filled with books about the body, you know?
It sounds like our sense of interoception, which is our sense of the internal workings in our body.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But again, one can explore that for a lifetime and still be discovering more.
Yeah. Well, and let me make a comment there, because my experience is that men in general are so focused externally. And I mean, we're looking for external validation as opposed to internal validation, but we're also think that the majority of reality exists outside of ourselves. So we pursue things like fame and wealth and power and prestige, but we're not very good on the whole turning inwards. I think it scares the crap out of us, most of us.
Yeah, we don't have too many roadmaps.
Or models. Yeah, role models.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, women focus externally as well. They tend to focus on how their body looks and whether or not they meet, you know, Vogue magazine standards rather than what's it feel like in your pelvis, in your shoulder, you know? What's the connection?
Yeah.
And let me give you a metaphor that I think helps with this, John. If the body were composed of a million tiny light bulbs, okay, that's your body. How many can you light up?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I like that. It's gamifying it.
Yeah. Yeah. Think about that. You know, I mean, many of us can light up our heads, you know, we get breathing.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, but can we light up our hearts? Can we light up our hearts and pelvis? When you start thinking about it this way, you begin to realize how important that internal connection is. And that's also a good metaphor for the concept presence.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? How present can you be? How much of your energy and attention can you direct towards something in front of you at any given moment in time, you know?
Yeah, I mean, so at the gym recently, I've been trying to connect with my obliques and get them to work on command and get a better feel for them.
Yeah.
I've never been connected with them.
That's one way of
the other thing. The other thing that you're saying is, you know, direct your energy, which makes me think of attention. I was just writing this morning about, you know, how we've got this massive problem with young people hating reading or just having a terrible dislike for reading. And, you know, one of the factors for that is continuous partial attention, I would argue, based on devices and social media, that their attention is so fragmented, they've never trained it to focus on one thing, which may not be, you know, some of the reading may not be that stimulating, might be boring for long periods of time.
Mm-hmm.
And so they can't really attend to something for any length of time.
Yeah.
Total tangent there. I apologize. So let me ask you another question. So you've made a connection. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I just wanted to finish answering your previous question about how to go about healing these wounds. And one is, as we're saying, enhancing that connection to your body from the inside, whether you do that at the gym, whether you do it through yoga. There's a system called Continuum. It's a meditation movement system that's brilliant. Whether you do it through Feldenkrais, so many ways, but with the intention of strengthening that connection. The second is relationship. And for most people, it's going to mean a good psychotherapeutic relationship, not one that's focused on getting rid of the symptoms, but one that's focused on, you know, deepening relationship. Because a person comes to psychotherapy, generally, they're not able of having a good intimate relationship. So the job of the therapist is to have a good relationship with somebody who doesn't know how to have a good relationship. And I think that can be very, very helpful, very important.
And when you said, oh, go ahead.
The third is, you know, relational education, you know, how to be in a relationship, how to be present, how to bring yourself authentically into the relationship and allow the other person to do the same.
Yeah. And I, when you said relationship, at first I was thinking, oh yeah, healing within relationship, because one of the ideas I love is that there's certain wounds that we have that can only be healed while in relationship, because they don't show up unless you're in relationship. And then you have to be in relationship with someone who's willing to work with you in order to heal certain traumas.
I totally agree.
Fear of abandonment, you know, for example.
Sure. Which is, you know, it's huge.
Or fear of betrayal.
Also huge. Fear of being suffocated.
Yeah. Fear of being controlled, sexual insecurities, all sorts of things.
Exactly. That can be healed only in relationship.
Yeah. So thank you for going back and finishing that.
Sure.
My continuous partial attention took us away from that.
Mm-hmm. There's one more. Spirituality.
Okay. Yeah.
Don't know how much you want to get into that or not, but you had another question. So,
well, the older I get, the more I've been interested and open to spirituality. So I just think it's interesting, because also, you know, as being taught at Cal as a quote unquote scientist, there's not really much about spirituality. And up until, I don't know, I would say 30 years ago, it was looked down upon to even believe in a higher power as a researcher or scientist. Again, going back to the beginning of our conversation, that I think it's emotional maturity, psychological maturity, to be able to hold competing and opposite and contradictory views in your mind about yourself at the same time. So, for example, I'm a scientist that values empirical data and research, and as such, I don't believe in God, because there can't be empirical proof of God. And yet at the same time, I choose to believe in God because I find it emotionally comforting, and it helps me to deal with the anxiety around my own death.
Yeah. And, you know, if you're fortunate, you have life experiences that make it very hard to not believe in a higher power, higher than me, higher than my own, you know, rational apparatus, that there's some force, some intelligence, some connectedness. Okay. That influences me, that's beyond me. I can tell you a brief story if you'd like.
Please.
Okay. Back in 2001, our health insurance company canceled the policy in the state of Washington and told us, you know, to go shop. Okay, had a trip to Albuquerque. Both my wife and I, our church was going into court to contest its right to use our sacrament and its services. And that was the first day of a 5.5-year court process that culminated in a Supreme Court decision, but we can answer that in a minute. On the way to the airport, we put an application for a new health policy in the mail. Okay? 2 nights later, in Albuquerque, New Mexico, as I was getting ready for bed, I had a severe heart attack. I was 59 years old. I'll be 80 next month. I was 59 years old, and the pain was in my solar plexus. I checked my chest, no pain. It was all down in my solar plexus, and it was extreme. I couldn't lie down. I couldn't stand up. I was just at 90 degrees for about 45 minutes of intense pain and sweat. It finally went away the next day, got up, went back to the courthouse, you know, and after the third day, went home. A month later, went to a doctor, and I convinced him to look in my abdomen because I was convinced that that's what we were dealing with. 3 months passed before I saw a cardiologist. And when he looked in there, he couldn't believe it because he didn't think there was anything wrong with my heart because I appeared kind of normal.
Kind of. I like the kind of.
Yeah. And he found that I had a pretty serious heart attack. My left ventricle was hardly functioning. 3 coronary arteries were mostly down. And there was a blood clot loitering in the left ventricle. And I'm still walking around. Yeah. Right. Did not die. Okay. I'm going to make this as succinct as I possibly can. He diagnosed the apex of the heart as being gone and much of the left ventricle, maybe, maybe not. It turned out that it was hibernating and returned after the surgery. The surgery was a rather cool experience. I mean, it was amazing. It really was. 3 months later, the apex of the heart was normal. He could not believe it. He got me back in for another test. He said that cannot happen. He doesn't make mistakes like that, you know. Yeah. So that kind of thing, you know, including the insurance, they covered an $80,000 surgery because I put it in the mail 2 days before, could have easily waited. I mean, you know, when you get a series of experiences like that, John, it's hard to say that there's something else going on here. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, that's a wild story.
Yeah.
I'm sorry that happened. I'm glad that you survived it. That's Thank scary you. As
me,
hell.
Me too.
You reminded me. So tell me a little bit about your church and the sacrament that you consider holy.
Yeah, it's a church that began in Brazil. It's both Christian and indigenous. Technically, it's called a syncretic religion that combines various elements. Our sacrament is what you generically call ayahuasca. And I've been participating now for 28 years. We have a group here where I live in Salt Lake City. We went all the way to the Supreme Court to 4 different courtrooms. We won in every one. The Supreme Court's decision was unanimous. back in 2006. What else can I tell you about it?
Yeah, that's an incredible story too. I think the reason I wanted to bring it up is because I think that's a fifth avenue to healing trauma, psychedelics.
Oh, absolutely.
And not anyone that's listening, don't just go and like take psilocybin on your own, but there's a process, there's a ritual. I think there's rules that you want to follow.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that, Don?
Absolutely. Well, you know, I took it on my own back in the 60s when I was in graduate school. And the first time I did, I realized that my very rigid secular view of reality needed some tweaking. it opened me up to possibilities that I otherwise would not have opened to. But I completely agree. I don't think young people in particular should be playing around with psychedelics. I think they require a whole lot of consciousness, either in a spiritual setting or a psychotherapeutic setting. But I think they're very powerful. And you know, John, I think it's the wave of the future.
I do too. I had an experience back in college with psilocybin where I came away and it stayed with me ever since. Just a visceral understanding of the interconnectedness of all things. Well, that's a huge understanding that I am extremely grateful for because it's shaped everything since.
That's profound. It's profound. Once you have an experience like that, it's hard to feel like an isolated, separate object in the world of other objects, you know, as kind of described in a Newtonian physics, right?
Yeah. Well, and I think that's one of the biggest problems with depression is when depressed, we feel like we are absolutely alone and cut off from every other living being on the planet.
Yeah. Or said it another way, when we feel cut off and isolated from everyone else on the planet, we feel depressed.
Yeah. Or alone or both.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Depression is a reflection, a manifestation of a lack of connection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So thank you for sharing that about your church. I think it's just a fascinating story. And as you said, I do think psychedelics are the future in terms of, and I've just heard it repeatedly that psychiatry doesn't have a tool as powerful in its toolbox as some of these psychedelics.
Oh,
MDMA, psilocybin, ayahuasca, and they're even looking at acid and ketamine. So I'm pretty excited about the possibilities that those present.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, so here's the question that I wanted to ask a little bit ago, but you rightfully reminded me that you weren't finished with the question I'd already asked. Thank you. How are vibrant health, high quality intimate relationships, and a good relationship with your body all interrelated?
That sounds like one of those graduate school essays.
Yes, it does. But I figured you were just the person to come to for an answer.
That you write on your comprehensive exam and you take about 2 hours and you organize it. But look, stress affects our health. The evidence is now conclusive. Intimacy is a human need. Interpersonal nourishment is essential to our sense of well-being. If that isn't present, you know, if we're not receiving, giving that nourishment, it in and of itself is a source of strength, which in turn, affects our nervous system, it affects our hormonal system and our health. Our connection to our body I was reading a book recently, and the author, I'm not going to mention his name, but he's very well known in the field of trauma. And he was saying he had an experience with his wife. You know, she disappointed him. She was supposed to pick him up at the airport, and she spaced out the time. And he said it took him 24 hours to let it go, to get over that. And I thought about that. I'm now able to get over something like that in 24 minutes at the most, and sometimes 24 seconds. Mm-hmm. And here's a man, clearly he's done his work, he's an expert in the field. Why is it taking him 24 hours? What could be the difference? And my guess is that I've put much, much, much more attention on my bodily tissues, my muscles and connective tissues, which in turn allows me to release, okay, the effects of the wound is a contraction. We contract, you can feel it, right? And what's being called for is let it go. Let it go. But if those tissues are tense, held, dense, it's harder. It takes more effort. How'd I do on that essay test?
Great. I mean, it seems to me to speak to the idea of resiliency, which I define as, I mean, at least on a physical and physiological level, as the ability to return back to a normal resting rate, resting heart rate, resting breathing rate, resting pulse as quickly as possible.
Exactly.
And part of that is predicated on physical health. Part of that is predicated on what you do to relax yourself and let it go psychologically.
Yeah, both. But again, those tissues are a big factor in the ease in which, okay, let's assume that you have the psychological wherewithal to say to yourself, okay, she messed up. It does not mean she's abandoning me. She loves me. I know it. Let's let this go. Okay? So assuming the psychological wherewithal, the tissues have to cooperate. Mm-hmm. Check out the work, John, of a woman named Emily Conrad, Conrad. She passed about 8-9 years ago. But she came along and she said, you know what? The body is some 70% water. We all know that as a biological fact. What she did with that was say, if it's water, how does water move? And spent a lifetime developing both within herself and teaching how we could actually link our consciousness to that deep level of our body and become fluid, internally fluid.
Huh. Did you ever see the movie What the Bleep Do We Know?
No, I don't
think. It was probably, it's kind of a documentary. It's part fiction, fantastic movie. It's probably 20 or 30 years old. But it has to do with quantum physics and, you know, emotion, molecules of emotion, Candace Pert, and I think Joe Dispenza's in it. But there was work by a Japanese researcher, and I can't remember his name, but he was looking at how our thoughts can affect the molecules of water.
Yeah, Emoto, so I think his name was.
Is that Emoto?
I think so. I know who you're talking about.
Okay, but I mean, I'm just picturing the different, at a molecular level, what the water looked like after, you know, a monk or a priest had blessed the water for 10 minutes versus someone thinking hate towards the water versus someone thinking love towards the water. And it makes me wonder, you know, wow, what
tremendous impact our own thoughts would have on the water molecules in our own body.
Yeah, you remember our little exchange on LinkedIn?
Mm-hmm.
About swearing? And
yes.
That's what I was thinking about.
Yeah.
You know, I don't believe it's the word itself. You know, I don't believe it's a combination of letters, you know, because L-U-C-K, luck, change one letter and all of a sudden it's a word.
But I do believe
the energy that we imbue the word in affects the water. That's the research that I was referring to.
Yeah.
You know?
And I do swear a lot, and I try to swear on the positive side.
Yeah. I know. I picked that up in your post.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm so fucking proud of you, for example. So the energy behind that is different. Partly I do that because A, we don't receive compliments well at all. So I'm trying to break into someone's psyche.
Right.
Partly because I want to magnify the intensity of that positive emotion for them.
Yeah.
I want to wake them up to the extent I can.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just...
I think it's different than when it's done with a... You know, that harsh negative energy, because the water, you know, our bodies are recording it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so is the other person's.
Yeah. Yeah. So we only got a few minutes left. So can you give me some key insights and practices to build an extraordinary relationship in 5 minutes? No pressure.
You must
be and heal the world at the same time.
Professor, huh? Yeah. Great essay type questions in 5 minutes.
Well, what are some practices to build a better relationship? I'll simplify it.
Yeah, I get the question and I want to see, you know, what's the best answer I can give you. I think it has to do with be willing to take the risks, to let yourself be sincerely known.
But Don, that's fucking terrifying.
Yes, it is. It is. And again, it's a practice. It's not an all or nothing, because in that practice, we reveal ourselves to ourselves as well as to the other. And if that can go both ways, and there's another image they talk about in my book, and a woman named Maewon Ho said that the water was structured in the following way: maximum independence and maximum cohesion. And she used the metaphor of a jazz band. Everybody playing their own, doing their own thing, but doing it in harmony and cohesion with the whole. And in a relationship, I think it's a dance between maximum closeness and maximum freedom.
Yeah.
Right? And it's like it moves, it's dynamic. Because if it's always maximum closeness, you've got a codependent relationship that feels a little suffocating, is always fraught with resentments. And if you have just maximum freedom, you know, it's empty in the sense that there's not enough closeness.
There's no relationship, potentially.
Yeah. So to be able to hold that, that's another one of those and things that we spoke about earlier, that you can be free in that relationship and very, very close at the same time.
Yeah, and, I love that.
Not keeping secrets, letting ourselves be known, you know? And listening, practice listening.
And I would add to that, listening non-defensively, that is huge. That takes some practice, right? I mean, and consider that anytime you're trying to explain what you were thinking or what you were doing, to some extent, that's being defensive. And it's hard not to do, to just say to your partner, I hear you. I understand. I'm sorry I hurt your feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Period.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're listening defensively, you're not listening. You're defending to that degree. Yeah. I think that's the best I can do in 5 minutes.
I think it's great. So thank you. So do me a favor and share with the listeners the titles of your two books and where they can find you.
Okay. Let me just share the second book, because it's a revision of the first, and it's just a better book all around. Healing the Wounds of Childhood and Culture, An Adventure of a Lifetime, with many, many rewards in that adventure.
And where can you find that? Where can I find that?
Amazon, Barnes & Noble, bookstores, they can all order it. On my website, www.pathsofconnection.com.
Pathsofconnection.com.
Yes.
Okay, fantastic. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Don. This was fantastic. I truly enjoyed it.
My pleasure, totally. I really enjoyed talking to you.
And that is it for this episode of The Evolved Caveman. If you like this episode, please be sure to like, rate, review, and share. And if you didn't like it, you don't have to do a damn thing. Thanks so much. I'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Evolved Caveman podcast. If you like what you've heard, support us by subscribing, leaving reviews, and sharing the podcast with friends and colleagues. For the latest, most powerful tools to connect with like-minded men, join the Facebook group at The Evolved Caveman. Follow Dr. John on Instagram at The Evolved Caveman, all one word, or join the email list by visiting guidetoself.com.